It's time!
The Eagle rises again! 29-0.
That's it! He's got the shot!
Nate Diaz!
He's out!
He has done it! It is all over! Nate Diaz beats Conor McGregor!
What a night, ladies and gentlemen! What a night!
Rose Namajunas trying to close the show!
She was doing a great job of faith!
That is it!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to yet another episode of Pound for Pound. We've been taking a little bit of hiatus lately, just going on and off with some of the episodes. Studio time is apparently hard to come by in the big 2024. But regardless of that, we have a really, really big card this week in UFC 308. But before we get all to that, I got Mahdi Dembele alongside me. I got Kurt Sipple behind the glass. We got a good episode for you guys today. So before we get going, Mahdi, how you doing, man?
I'm feeling tired. As I was saying to you, Zach, like earlier, I feel dead. But Kurt playing Beautiful Girls by Sean Kingston, I mean, it's an all-time tune. Like, yeah, it lifts your soul, it lifts your spirit. I got the coffee, so I should be able to survive by the end of this episode. But when I'm talking UFC, I feel like there's nothing better in the world. So I'm ready to get it rocking, ready to get it rolling here with you, Zach.
Now, before we get into UFC 308, which alone is, I can't wait to talk about this this fight, guys. I'm pumped for these co-main event. We're in for a treat this weekend. But before we get to that, Francis Ngannou made his return to the octagon, securing a first-round TKO victory over, I'm going to butcher the name, Renan Ferreira, I believe, was his opponent. Knocked him out with some vicious, vicious ground and pound. Francis is back, man. Is he the true heavyweight king? Is it fair to say that at this point?
I think he has to be considered. I think at this moment, sure, he surely does. You talk about Francis Ngannou, really what he's doing. It's by hook or by crook, he's trying to make himself a bigger sports star, much in the way of that Conor McGregor did it, like once upon a time. He's trying to venture out, and he's trying to be more than simply, I know the adage for LeBron James is more than an athlete. He's trying to be more than a fighter and really control his own branding. And obviously, he had to split up with Dana, and that's a whole other thing, because if you're Francis Ngannou, you feel like that you are a main draw and that you're just bigger than something that the UFC can mold you into. And he's proving that, and he's doing that. He's taking fights with Anthony Joshua, a fight that he looked impressive in. You look impressive in the fight against Fury. You lose to Joshua, but you're in there with the biggest names, both combat sports of boxing and mixed martial arts. He's changing the game with his fist. And you can't be mad at the guy. He's doing it the Francis Ngannou way. Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about it before on here. He bet on himself.
Yeah.
And that bet continued just to cash in time after time after time. Francis is getting his bag. He's getting his money. At the same time, reestablishing himself at the top of the food chain in the heavyweight division, whether he's in the PFL or the UFC. Now, yes, the argument is that the UFC has better competition, better fighters. You got John Jones currently the champion over there. You have Tom Aspinall with the UFC. But still, Francis immediately coming in, getting a title shot in the PFL, and making quick work of a guy who has been a problem in this division for a while. It just shows there's levels to this game, and Francis Ngannou is at the top level. He is the boss. He is the champion once again, and it was a really emotional performance for him. This is one where he's coming off of the loss of his child. I can't remember exactly how his child passed away, but he wanted to honor his legacy, saying that he didn't get to fight for his kid, so he felt like this was that opportunity to finally fight for his son, and crying in the octagon after winning the belt and getting really emotional. The guy deserved it. He deserved it all in terms of winning that and all of the praise for how great he is as a fighter and also just as a person. The guy's done a lot for his community. He's, like as we've mentioned, bet on himself, and he's used that money for good. The guy's a smart man. He's a businessman. But at the same time, at the end of the day, he is once again a heavyweight champion back in the PFL. We'll see what's coming up next for Francis. Maybe more boxing. Who knows? Hopefully the confidence isn't too shaken after that loss to Joshua. But I can't wait to see what's next for Francis Ngannou.
Really quick, it was a brain malformation that went undiagnosed. 15 months old, the kid died.
Yeah. Yeah, his son was very young when he passed. So just really, really sad and really special to see Francis come out with a win this past weekend. And the way he did it was memorable. But moving on from that, we'll see what Francis Ngannou has coming for him in the future. But I know it's coming this weekend. UFC 308 down in Abu Dhabi. In Abu Dhabi. I was going to say Saudi Arabia. Abu Dhabi, we got an early start time because, hey, when we're in Abu Dhabi, we go normal time for the local viewers. Can't do it for Manchester. Can't do it for any of the other places. But, hey, we'll let Abu Dhabi get their fun. We have a stacked card for this weekend. Starting off with Shara Bullitt is making his return to the octagon. He's going to be fighting against Armin Petrosian. And in this first matchup kicking off the main card, how are we feeling, man? We got Shara coming in with a lot of excitement, a lot of hype, but that striking is, man, it's something to watch. It's creative, it's fluid, it's sharp. The guys, at one point, I know the hype's died down a little bit after his last performance against Dracoli. He had a tough time finishing the guy who showed up on, I want to say, less than a week's notice, looked super out of shape, and Shara didn't necessarily put on the performance we all expected. And that killed a little bit of the hype. But people were talking about Shara as a future champion at one point. And he's making his return back this weekend. How are you feeling?
I mean, both a world-class striker. Continuing on the topic of Shara Magomedov, I mean, like, he took that last loss on the chin. But Petrosian, also an excellent, excellent striker. Mm-hmm. I think Magomedov is a kick-first type of fighter. Like, he likes to infuse the leg kicks within his fighting. I do have Petrosian in this fight. I think he will look to rely on closing the distance, and he's going to let his hands go. I like the way he sits on his shots, and he fights on the front foot, and he's able to, when the flurry comes with him, the flurry comes. And I don't know if Magomedov is going to be able to survive the flurry, the avalanche that Petrosian is going to be able to provide. And coming off of a loss, that only gives more credence to Petrosian.
No. Sorry to correct you. Shar is still undefeated, but it was It was a win the last time out, but it was not an impressive win. No.
Okay, so yeah, with that, I think Petrosian's gonna be able to close the distance. I think he's gonna be able to sit on his shots. I think he wins this exchange with two world class fighters. Yep.
Both strikers coming into this, so it's an interesting matchup because it will be standing. Petrosian, no subs to his name, and then Shara, of course, not for him either. Mm-mm. Petrosian's been knocked out once in his career. He's coming off of a sub loss in his last fight, but he doesn't have to worry about the ground this time because Shara's not going to be taking him down. But what he does have to worry about, though, are those lightning fast kicks.
Yeah.
Shara just seems like he can fling him up from just about any position. Kind of reminds me of a Yair down in featherweight.
Yeah.
The way he throws those kicks up, he's super creative with it, super fluid with it. You just have to always be watching for it, and he can sneak something in to where he catches you. The thing that always has concerned me about Shara is the power and the finishing ability.
Yeah.
Yes, the striking is very flashy, but I don't feel like it's super, super powerful. It's landing, but it's not always landing super hard. And I feel like he lacks a little bit of the finishing ability that you kind of want to see from a guy who you want to consider as a future champion.
Especially from a guy who's so big. I think he's like 6'2", 6'3", 73-inch reach. Like, he's a big guy. Yep. You see the frame on him. He's a tank on him.
I think if he adds on that power, he starts running through dudes, then that hype's back. We're back on track with Shara Bullitt, and I think that he does get back on track this weekend. Yes, I think it's a tougher fight for him on paper than his past couple, especially coming off of that kind of tough performance in his last one. But I think having a guy come in on a week's notice also does throw off your game plans. You weren't game planning for that kind of strategy. You're in game planning for that type of frame, everything. Tricoli was a bigger fighter, I believe. He was a longer fighter going into that fight, and Shara definitely had a little bit of problems with that. Not to mention, Tricoli was just tough.
Yeah.
He ate a lot of shots and walked through it. Even though he was dead tired, he was just walking through shots, and I think he was tougher than Shara expected him to be. And I think that's something that was good for Shara. I think he needed a fight where he wasn't winning super convincingly and raised questions, I guess, in his own mind to get him back in the gym, get him back grinding, get him back to that prior form that we saw him that earned him all the hype. And I think that he can get back to that form this weekend and get secure a win. I don't know if I want to say he gets a knockout, but I do want to say if he does get a knockout, that definitely adds to that definitely is going to add to the hype a lot because people are very concerned about the finishing ability and the power. But I do think we do get a master class in the striking, and we learn this weekend that there are levels to the striking, and Charbonneau coming in with this perfect record is the standard of that.
I mean, he wasn't able to put down Michael Oleszczyk because he had a fight at right after Trocoli. That was with Oleszczyk, who's coming off of a loss against Kevin Holland, and that was a decision, right? That took all three rounds there. So, again, a finish is something that I see unlikely. He'll definitely bring it in the striking department, as we've outlined before, but I don't know if he's just going to be able to. Like, it's just not fair. It's a conversation that a lot of people were starting to have with, like, a guy like Kamaru Usman. Like, all those muscle, like, he looks like a big guy, but he wasn't putting guys down until Jorge Masvidal found out. But I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be against a guy like Petrosyan.
So you're going Petrosyan?
I'm going to go Petrosyan.
I'm going to pick Char for this bullet fight to open up the main card. I think it's going to be fireworks regardless. We got two strikers, Char Bullet. Like I said, the striking has been so clean, so exciting so far in his career. So I'm excited for that one to open up the main card. A good vibe to open the main card on. But following that right up, we got Lerone Murphy versus Dan Ige. Lerone Murphy coming in undefeated, 14-0 and 1-0 contest. He's coming off of a win over Edson Barboza. Big win on the record. And Dan Ige, if you guys don't remember, made that 3-hour, I guess you guys, stepping in on the co-main, 3 hours saving the card of UFC 303, stepping in to fight Diego Lopez after Brian Ortega had to drop out of that fight. I still remember sitting in. I was there for that fight. I remember seeing Dan Ige pop up on the Jumbotron. Oh, Ortega's out this weekend, but we have an opponent. And it's Dan Ige. That's just stuck in my mind. So Dan Ige making his return once again to the octagon after doing that. Now kind of like the hero in a lot of people's hearts after that. He's definitely gained a lot of fans after just stepping in a big moment and doing something that most people would not do, stepping on 3 hours. But he has another tough one against him because Lerone Murphy coming into this fight is he's one of the brightest prospects, I want to say, in the UFC, coming in undefeated, getting his main card spot with a chance to shine. Coming in here as a minus 290 favorite, he will have a slight reach advantage, 73.5 inches to Dan Ige, 71, and a slight 2-inch height advantage. Coming in as a striker now here in the featherweight division, what do we see here? Because Dan Ige's shown in the past he has the power to put people out.
He does indeed have the power to put people out. And Dan Ige, thank you for the Diego Lopez, like, the back. I absolutely love that. It's what you want to see from your fighters. He does indeed have the power. I don't think, against popular opinion, we're going to get a knockout here. I'm going to go with Lerone Murphy, 14-0. I believe he has 1-0 contest on his record, or one draw is, I know it's 14-0 and I believe 1.
Yep.
Lerone Murphy is probably, like, you're talking about two guys who are exceptionally well-rounded. I think he's the sharper in that department. I think he's the more complete fighter. His pedigree on the ground is really, really what sways me. I believe he's a blue belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I think that's where this fight is going to go. He has more ways to win this fight. I think it's going to be on the ground. Ige does have a tendency to be taken down and not be able to get back to his feet. You saw that with Diego Lopez, who was like Charles Oliveira 2.0, as we pointed out. So with Lerone Murphy, I do believe that he's just going to put him on his legs, keep him there. I don't think we'll get a knockout. We'll probably get a little bit of a boring kind of fight here. Control time. Maybe he'll just lay on the guy. But I do think that's the way this fight's going to go.
You think so? For me, at least, I think Murphy wants to keep this one standing, at least the way I look at it. I think you, coming off of that win over Edson Barboza, you have some confidence. Because Edson Barboza, even at his age, still one of the very tricky strikers now in the UFC. And Ige's coming off the loss to Lopez, but it's hard to look at that as a loss, considering the circumstances, him stepping in 3 hours' notice. So before that, he's coming off over a knockout win over Andre Feely. And then before that, a loss to Bryce Mitchell. It's been on and off for Dan Ige. But like I said, he does possess that power. Knocking out a veteran like Andre Feely has got to give him some confidence going into this matchup, especially with the guy who I'm not sure would want to take him down. Dan Ige, I feel like, is the more experienced grappler out of the two guys. I think Murphy is definitely the better striker in terms of he's just sharper. He's more fluid. I think that he has the edge on the feet, and I think he wants to keep it there. But at the same time, I don't think Dan Ige is too opposed to keeping it on the feet either, because he knows that he has that swinging chance because of the power.
Because of the power, exactly. I think that's an excellent, excellent point there. If you're Lerone Murphy, I mean, like, Edson Barboza, yeah, like, 40 years old? Mm. Very tricky, still, like aging like fine wine, yeah. Almost like Wonderboy Thompson. Those are the two old men that are still here sticking around, but... Yeah. That's not a chance you want to take. It depends how crazy you are. I don't want to say dumb how, because you're a fighter, right?
Yeah.
You got to be crazy to be a fighter. But
you got to get crazy to get in there. Yeah, a little crazy.
A little bit crazy. But I think if you want to win this clean and fair, I think your best opportunity is to go on the ground.
Mm.
Because if you stand with Dan Ige, he has to be perfect for a single second.
Mm-hmm.
And if he touches your chin, he touches your temple, your orbital bone, you're going down. Right. So, yeah. I think that would have to be the situation in which Dan Ige wins. Otherwise, yeah, I'm still sticking with Lerone Murphy.
You're with Lerone Murphy. I'm also going to stick with Lerone Murphy to stay perfect here, moving up to a 15-0 if he were to pull it out this weekend. But regardless, you think it's going to be a boring fight? I think we may be in for an all right one here. I think this is, on paper, this looks like it would be a fun matchup, at least if it doesn't become like a whole control time battle. But if they do keep it standing, I think we do get some exciting striking moments, especially with that just the power that Dan Ige possesses.
Yes.
It's kind of, he leaves you on the end of your seat a little bit. You're watching, what's going to happen? But moving on from that, the featured bout of the night, a little shock here, because Ankalaev seemed like he was up next for that light heavyweight title against Alex Pereira.
Should have got the shot. Should've.
But he's the one who turned it down. He wanted to fight in Abu Dhabi, and it just may cost him the title, because Alexander Rakic is coming in here to try to steal that title shot from him. And if he can beat him on Saturday, if he can beat Ankalaev, who has seemed like he's been almost unbeatable in his UFC career, as well-rounded as it gets, Rakic is still very dangerous. And I think he knows going into this weekend, he has a shot to steal that title fight there. But Ankalaev, like I said, as well-rounded as they come, incredible ground game. His striking is powerful. He's even threatening to stand up with Alex Pereira the whole fight.
Mm-mm.
We know how well that's gone for all of his past opponents. But regardless, Ankalaev is going to be taking the chance here, risking that number one contender status to take on Rakic in Abu Dhabi, because he wanted to be on this card so bad. Now, looking at it, Rakic is coming off of two knockout losses. One of those two was to Blachowicz back in 2022, and then most recently at UFC 300, he got knocked out by Jiří. He got caught. But besides that, I still feel like he had a good performance. He didn't look bad in that fight. He was catching Jiří at some point. In some points, he was destroying his legs with those leg kicks. I remember Jiří even going to the corner and being like, I can't feel my legs. My legs are numb. And that's the Rakic leg kicks. He's good at those. He has a really weird fight style where he likes to fight backwards. He likes to fight off the back foot. And for Ankalaev, at least, with the wrestling threat there, he likes that forward pressure. So I think that it's the perfect matchup there in terms of a guy that likes to go backwards and a light guy that likes to push forward. I think because of that, we are going to get some exciting exchanges. I don't know how to look at this one.
I don't know how to look at it either. Can I say this? This may be a little bit controversial. I think Ankalaev, I think people look at his wrestling pedigree and go, oh, wow, this guy, like, he may be the guy to take down Alex because he's the only guy who could possibly challenge him there.
Right.
I think he's a capable, he's not a great takedown artist. Mm. He's capable there.
Mm-hmm.
I think Rakic should be able to handle, like, whenever he tries to go to the ground with him and try to wrestle. I think Rakic would be able to weather that storm.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Ankalaev is going to try to strike in this one. I think it's going to be more striking than grappling. He said that if he had a good fight, he would be in line for a title shot. Rakic spent the first round of his fight against Jiří looking very, very good. Looked very good. And then, you know, he got caught. Because Jiří, like, absolutely, like, turned into, like...
Hey, it's just Jiří.
it's Jiří Prochazka. I think Ankalaev could crack Rakic, but I think Rakic, again, like I said before, is going to be able to weather the storm. I think he's the more technical striker. Yeah. I think Rakic by decision is the correct move to go. It's weird, but if I had to pick, I think Rakic comes Rakic in and decision. He steals it from Ankalaev.
That would be crazy if Rakic could come in here and steal that title shot, because, like I said, everyone's saying Ankalaev's next. He's the test that Alex Pereira needs to get past in that light heavyweight division if we really want to throw him in that all-time status. Which, at this point, you can't not put Alex in all-time status. No, but at the same time, I do agree with that. I think Ankalaev would want to strike on Saturday because he's got a test where he's at. He's got a really, yeah, and I feel I like if he can go in there and really let his hands go and start landing, even put down Rakic, if he's able to knock out Rakic, you can only imagine what that could do for a guy's confidence who's going to go in there and fight Alex Pereira, the arguably the scariest striker, hardest hitter in all of the UFC, yeah, maybe in all of UFC history. That left hook is a thing of a legend. You have to have some sort of confidence into the striking. I feel like if he goes in here and just takes Rakic down, it leaves a little doubt in the mind in terms of, where are my hands at? I think he wants to find out this weekend where he's at. And not only just find out, he wants to make a statement to all UFC fans in the light heavyweight division that, hey, if I want to go stand with Alex in the octagon, I can. And I think that's the statement he wants to
deliver. I feel like it's
weekend.
An Icarus situation, though, because it's too close to the sun.
I agree.
Right? Like, Rakic, I picked him to win because I believe he will play spoiler. Like, this could be a karma moment. Like, you wanted to fight in Abu Dhabi or Riyadh, whatever it was. Yeah. And then here's your karma against a guy who's tricky and who could trap you. Right. Like, you should have found this out earlier in your career. If you do get to this point, you do beat Rakic. Don't go there with Alex.
Yeah.
Like, I know, do not go there with Alex Pereira. Like, we've seen this, we've seen this movie already.
Yeah.
I feel like it's too late for that. If you want to win, you got to stick to what you know best. It's a muscle memory. Just go in there, try to employ your wrestling. As I said, it's a bit overrated. It's good. It's good takedown. It's very, very capable. It's not great. And then employ your wrestling from there.
Yeah. And we know at the UFC, man, it's opportunity.
Yeah.
Is you got to take it. Whenever you get the chance, you got to go. And we just saw Khalil Roundtree capitalize on that. Yes, he didn't win the fight. Everybody's talking about Khalil Roundtree like he won the fight because of his incredible performance. And Ankalaev turned that shot down because he wanted to fight in Abu Dhabi. So maybe he gets on the UFC's bad side with that. He's got to win this weekend. I think he's got to make it convincing because you can't just turn down that fight to fight in Abu Dhabi and put on a bad performance. You got to go out there and make a statement. And if he can go out there, especially with his hands, and go out there and make a statement, if he can knock out Rakic,
exactly,
that's how everyone's going to be like, you know what? Because there's the talk right now of, well, Alex could just go up. He should go up. Yep. Or he should. He was talking about even going down at one point. He doesn't want to get in his friend Sean Strickland's way. But if Sean Strickland were to lose that rematch to Rakic Duplessis, I have no doubt that Alex is going to want to go back down to try to fight him. And if Ankalaev wants this fight up next, if he wants his next fight to be for the title and he wants it soon, he's got to make a statement on Saturday. He's got to put Rakic out. He's got to finish this fight, whether it's on the ground or through the striking. He's got to finish it, and he's got to make a statement.
Ankalaev bit off a lot. Let's see if he bit off more than he can chew. Mm-hmm. I think that's the sentiment for this fight.
Betting on himself. And speaking of asking to bite off more than you could chew, Khamzat Chimaev has taken a big jump in competition. He's going to be fighting... I almost said future. Former champion Robert Whittaker, the Reaper.
Are you manifesting?
Am I? Are we? Is that what's going on here? Because I like Rob, and I can't wait to see him back in action this weekend. And I know when he... And bringing him back up now, this was a fight that was scheduled for earlier this year.
Overdue.
And it was a fight night main event at one point, and Khamzat had to pull out due to being sick. He got sick on fight weekend. Stepping in for him was... His friend that he knocked out in an older promotion, Ikram Oleskarov, stepped in to try to fight Whittaker, and Whittaker just dismantled him.
Destroyed.
That uppercut that he landed to put him out was just perfect. It was perfect. And to me, Whittaker in that matchup, it looked like we saw a new Robert Whittaker, a new version of it, because I think that he knows what the challenge is in Khamzat Chimaev, and I think he took it very, very seriously. And we saw that reflected in his performance against Ikram, because the way that he dismantled Ikram, people don't just go in there and do that. People don't put Ikram on the back foot. He didn't even look like he was worried about the takedown. And I think that's the main question this weekend is, can Whittaker withstand that first onslaught?
First of all, let me say this about Robert Whittaker. You talk about how he was a champion earlier on, and this was before the class of Israel Adesanya and the more modern class of the middleweight division as we've come to know them. But... It's like perfect timing for him to have. First of all, he's having a rejuvenation. Mm-hmm. He's young. Like, he was younger than Izzy. He's been in the UFC longer, but he was young. He's only 33 up to this point. Yeah. Right? Adesanya, you want to say he's on his way out? Do you ever think he'll be champion? He's not in the discussion right now. Dracus is for the taking, as tricky and weird as he is. Sean Strickland's still there. That's a winnable fight. Like, he's having a rejuvenation. Mm-hmm. He's still young, and the division is there for him to take. But we cannot forget about Khamzat Chimaev. A rocket ship was attached to his back. I believe two dominant wins in a 10-day stretch. I think that's what it was when he first entered the scene. And then weight cut issues, like Nate Diaz was
all
a sacrificial.
All the controversies. The weight cuts, just the pulling out of fights constantly.
And that was now, what, four or five years ago now?
Yeah.
Like, this is a fight, like, for both men, that if you win, you are the biggest talk in town. The same way, like, the Liberty just won the finals, and now mm-hmm. they're on the newspaper everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, that is what this fight, it's like the old school, but he's really young, so he's really... New school is having a rejuvenation, and he's trying to get back his second act in his young career back to the title. And the guy who was supposed to be is now finally arrived here. Like, beating Whitaker is going to be no easy task.
No.
But, and Chimaev has looked, I would say, human in his more recent fights. You think back to the Gilbert Burns fight. I think that's the one that resonates the most if you want to talk about how human he looked. Kamaru Usman as well, I think, is a good example. If that was five, I think Usman is still in the conversation there. But, I mean, like, it's hard to bet against Chimaev. It's so hard because when you get him in the ring at his best, he dispatches everyone. Mm-hmm. It's like you don't even have to think about it. I love Robert. I would want nothing more than him to win. But Khamzat Chimaev is literally a serial killer.
Now, here's one thing that... I don't know if everyone's fully aware of it because it's such a risky move, I feel like, for Khamzat. But this is a 5-round fight. It's scheduled for five rounds.
Yeah.
And it's the gas tank, because watching that Kamaru Usman fight, if there's two more rounds added to that fight,
Usman.
Kamaru wins that fight. Yeah. He was winning. I want to say Usman won the second round and the third round.
The third round.
But that first round was just so dominant for Khamzat that he got a 10-8 on some of the scorecards. Mm-hmm. Now, if he doesn't get a 10-8, he potentially loses that fight. If that fight is more than three rounds, he likely loses it because of the way it was looking, it was going. He looks like he gassed out early, and Usman was starting to roll. And I think with Robert Whittaker, a guy with five-round experience already, Khamzat coming into his first five-round fight, you got to kind of lean with Whitaker in terms of if he can survive that first onslaught, if he could weather the storm, at least I say for those first two rounds, I want to say after that, it's all Robert Whitaker's world.
That is a fair enough conversation, but I'll give you three words. Drake is Duplessis. The power that Robert Whitaker, love him to death. People are saying he's on the back half of his career. Again, it's weird because he's still so young, 33.
Two in a row now. He's beaten Costa and he's beaten Oscarov. And what I said, like, as I mentioned earlier, I feel like we see a new version of Robert Whittaker, rejuvenated Robert Whittaker.
He's been overpowered, like, with, like, the power of some of these other guys, like Gudrakis Duplessis, has, like, overwhelmed him. And you've seen Robert go down. That was the biggest surprise I've ever seen.
But look at his losses, though, because we're talking about that. It's Duplessis and Adesanya are his two most recent losses. And those are two guys who are the very, very top of the food chain.
Very, very true. Whittaker has enough tricks in his bag.
And I think that it's not too late to have this rejuvenation tour yet for him. I think that he could come back, and I think that he knows taking this fight with Khamzat is what gets him back to the title, because everybody, Khamzat's the talk of the town, finishing everybody like it's nothing, just ragdolling dudes with the grappling, and nobody's able to stop that takedown defense. He's relentless. Well, Whittaker wants the challenge. He welcomes it. He was supposed to fight him earlier this year, falls out, and he says, give me him again. I want to make sure that you guys know that I can beat this guy. And this is a guy who's been in there with Yoel Romero, and we're talking about guys who are strong with grapplers. Yoel, I mean, that guy was a tank.
Yoel, you know what? I'll do this. I'll side with you. I'll say Robert Whittaker wins this fight.
There you go.
But he has to be, like, variety has to be the spice of life. I know what Robert Whittaker is. I know this second iteration of him is awesome, but he has to bring everything. You have to make Khamzat respect your game so he doesn't just go in there and ragdoll you. And as the fight goes on, maybe that, but you have to get to that point where the advantage of a 5-round fight is on your side. round one and round two has to be some of the best fighting that Robert Whittaker has ever done if he wants to reach a second win outside with Robert Whittaker. But he has to be perfect in round one and round two.
My question is for you. Do you think that knowing it's a five-round fight and knowing his history with gassing out, do you think that Khamzat approaches it differently, or do you think he's just going there, I need to finish, or and I need to finish and I need it fast?
Weight issues have been like, because you could tell Khamzat he's a bit arrogant in a certain way. I'll kill everyone, but even outside the ring, you sense that arrogance. He didn't care when he was a million pounds overweight against Nate Diaz. If he's worked on it, I think, like, if Khamzat Chimaev worked out his one issue and that was the gas tank, like, say your prayers, everyone. Hail Mary, full of grace. But I don't know if he's worked on it. I don't think he's worked on it. And if not, I think it will be an issue that will plague him, because weight issues, like, it's been something that's always been there. Yeah. But if he hasn't overcome that, then he's doing himself a disservice. And again, Robert Whittaker may be able to pull this one out.
We've just seen so little of him in the past years. It's hard to really get a gauge of how good this guy is at the moment. He beat Kevin Holland before Usman. That was, again, last minute because the card got shuffled around because he missed weight. And then before that was Gilbert Burns, which Gilbert Burns made Khamzat look human that fight.
Yeah.
Yes, Khamzat won, but he made him look human.
I thought Gilbert won that fight. I picked Gilbert.
And I feel like a lot of people did feel like Gilbert won. And regardless of whether Gilbert won, he still tagged Khamzat. Yeah. He still kind of dropped him. He wobbled him. I don't know if we're going to call that a drop, but Gilbert Burns made him look very human, and I just wonder what a step up in competition like Robert Whittaker is going to make Khamzat look like. And just knowing what Whittaker looked like earlier this year when he fought Ikram, I just think that he's taking this completely seriously, and he's really ready to get back for that title shot.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Khamzat's going to be the arrogance. If you really, really want it, then you'll lock in. Yep. But if you're Robert, and Robert, if he does that, if he's locked in a focused Khamzat, perfect fighting rounds one and two.
In other words, I'm telling you right now, I don't think that this is going to be a decision win for Khamzat if he wants to win it. He's got to finish this thing, and I think he's got to finish it early, because if this thing goes past two, I think we're in Robert Whittaker's world, and after that, I think I could even see a late round knockout from Robert Whittaker.
I think that's fair. That's fair.
I think my official... What's your official pick
here, though? I'll go Robert Whittaker...
I think that's fair, man. I think we got to go with Bobby Knuckles.
Robert Whittaker, but KO. KO maybe the fourth.
Getting bold. Yeah. I like the fourth round, too. I was about to say that, too. It was on the tip of my tongue. I'm also going to go Robert Whittaker fourth round if we're going to get specific here, but he's got to weather that storm for the first two rounds.
Perfect fighting.
And speaking of weathering storms, we got Ilia Topuria and Max Holloway in the main event. Man, okay. I have no idea.
He must die.
How to look at this fight.
He must die. For my own sanity, he must die.
And just looking at this fight now comes after these guys have both had monster, and I mean monster, performances in their last fights. Ilia Topuria, of course, knocking out Alexander Volkanovski earlier this year at this point?
Yeah.
Time moves fast, man. Earlier this year, Ilia Topuria knocking out Alexander Volkanovski, which before the Islam fight, the second Islam fight, I couldn't picture or even think of Volkanovski ever getting finished. The guy is just that good. And then he gets knocked out by Islam. Makes the somewhat quick turnaround 3 months later and fights Ilya down in California.
Yeah.
And Ilya just shuts his lights out in the second round badly.
I think that's a big reason why. If Alexander Volkanovski wasn't stepping in for Jesus Christ every 3 seconds, he was fairly cracked coming into that fight. And I think even stylistically, that's a bad matchup for him.
Yeah.
Fairly cracked. It's not a good matchup. You're the smaller guy. You don't have the reach. I think he really set himself up. He did himself a disservice when you took Ilya on that fight. But Max Holloway's tricky.
And we want to talk about monster performances. Oh, man. Max Holloway
5-0
supernova at UFC 300. Yeah, that win over Justin Gaethje. We all know it. Every MMA fan, it is ingrained in our minds for the rest of our life. The final 10 seconds, Max Holloway pointing down at the ground, saying, let's do this, and throwing down with Justin Gaethje and knocking him out in the last second. Ah, man, what a moment for one. But that there's no way you could have denied him a title fight after that moment. And we have two guys coming in now who are just absolute superstars. And I think I just don't know how to look at it.
Max, Because I know the MMA math, I know the MMA math goes against it, right? Ilya took down the guy that beat Max, so he beat the bully's bully. But it's almost like Max is, he has more range. Like crisp boxing. You want to talk about Ilya Topuria's boxing because of the power? Max is like, Max is as swift. Like, he places his punches perfectly. He's able to break the guard, the left hook, the whatever you want from a boxer, Max is able to give it to you. Topuria has more ways to victory. I do think he was a jiu-jitsu practitioner, really.
His primary discipline is grappling.
Is grappling. But the boxing is really what surprises you, because it's clean for a guy who's a grappler. But for my own sanity, there's no analysis around it. I need Max Holloway to win.
I'm sure Andrew Canary is somewhere smiling hearing that. He may be joining us actually next week for those who have listened to Pound for Pound for a little while. Andrew Canary may be joining back for this, because the only way to get Andrew Canary back is, of course, you got to lure him in with Max Holloway, his goat. But, man, I don't know how to look, because people talk about Ilya, and I feel like yes, people don't like him. A lot of people think he's cringy, da-da-da-da-da. He talks a lot. The guy writes a lot of checks that he hasn't yet cashed, but... I remember he did this against Volk as well, and people said the same thing, that the talk was too big for the guy. He wasn't going to live up to it, but he did everything he said he was going to do, and he's the current champion. The guy hits like a truck.
Like a truck. Knocks out heavyweights in sparring. Is that the whole thing?
Everything. And the guy is, I mean, you saw his fight against Josh Emmett. Yeah, Josh Emmett's also one of the hardest hitters in the UFC. Ilya did not at one point fear standing in the pocket with Josh Emmett, and I would even go as far to say that his defense was flawless for that fight. His game plan was perfect, and it's what worries me in this fight is that power and his ability to just get to his opponents. Like, even Volk has in the past fought hard hitters, but still has been able to stay elusive, stay away from the cage, and that's really Holloway's key, is he can't let him get against the cage, because that's when Ilya lets the combinations fly, and when the combinations from Ilya start flying, that's when he starts landing, and he just needs to land one. The guy throws tanks.
Who has a better chin? Can I ask you this? Who has a better chin than Max Holloway?
And that's what was going to get tested this weekend, and that's another thing, and we're talking about chin. And that's where I was going earlier with the whole Volkanovski thing. I couldn't even begin to imagine the guy ever getting finished. More or less getting knocked out like that.
He broke down his chin, though. Like, he steps in every single time. At some point, that trick is going to come back to bite you. This is not the situation. Like, Max Holloway, legendary chin. Legendary.
But he even got dropped by Gaethje in this last one. Yes, I don't want to say, like, the chin is necessarily cracked yet, but everyone's got to get caught, I feel like, at some point, especially if you're primarily a striker. And I don't think that... As much as I can't even picture it, I don't think that Max Holloway is necessarily invincible, especially in this matchup with Ilya Topuria, who just one shot from the guy could change an entire fight. And the way that he put down Volkanovski, unlike anything I've ever seen, the guy is just... I think he has the... And I was talking about this earlier. This guy has the real, I feel like, potential to potentially be a face of the company if he could keep this rolling. And you get two wins in a row... Especially if he can knock out Max Holloway. I mean, the first guy to ever knock out Max Holloway. If he can get a knockout over Volk and then a knockout over Max back to back, we're talking
Rocket
about
ship.
An absolute superstar. And if Max Holloway can't beat Ilya Topuria, I don't know who can. Truly, I don't know who can. But
we have to cross that bridge when we get there.
When we get there. But like I said, Max Holloway coming out, that's what this is everybody
keep
said.
Keep at range,
though.
Use the leg kicks, work your boxing. He's been dropped once before by a heavy power hitter. Like, it took Justin Gaethje, a UFC legend, to do it. Ilya, you got to show me. I'm trying to rationalize this any way in my brain.
And that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what people said when Holloway was going to fight Justin Gaethje is, this guy hits too hard. There's no way. The chin's got to crack at some point. Max is out of his element. Well, he's back in it again. He's on plus 200 underdog coming in this weekend. Max Holloway, no stranger to being underdog and delivering big performances. I'm nervous for this one, man. I can't give a pick for it. You're going Max Holloway. I'm going to go Max Holloway for vibes because I want Max to win. But, man,
please.
This is just – you just got to sit and watch this one. I am pumped for it. But – remember this weekend, early start time, UFC 308. I know I'll be watching. Hopefully Marty will be watching. This is a busy man over here.
Oh, my God.
But just like that, that'll do it for our episode this week of Pound for Pound. If you haven't yet, check out our socials. Check out online. We've been putting out more and more content online, so we're definitely getting into that. Check out me and Marty's Twitter feeds for some content hopefully coming up at MSG. We'll see about that. But I've been Zach Cordova alongside Marty Dembele. Kurt Sippel was behind the board, always stepping in on late notice.
Yes,
Alexander Volkanovsky action. We'll see you again next week. Thank you for tuning in.